He pointed at Monat. What kind of a freak is that? Burton explained. Goering looked grave, then said, I couldn't trust him. He goes into the slave camp. You there, ape man, what do you say? Kaz, to Burton's surprise, stepped forward.
I kill for you. I don't want to be slave.
He took the club, while the guards held their spears, poised to run him through if he had other ideas for using it. He glared at them from under his shelving brows, then raised the club. There was a crack, and the slave pitched forward on the dirt. Kaz returned the club to Campbell and stepped aside. He did not look at Burton.
Goering said, All the slaves will be assembled tonight, and they will be shown what will happen to them if they try to get away. The escapees will be roasted for a while, then put out of their misery. My distinguished colleague will personally handle the club. He likes that sort of thing.
He pointed at Alice.
That one, I'll take her.
Tullius stood up.
No, no, I like her. You take the others, Hermann. I give you both of them. But, Sai, I want her very muck. Sai look like, what you say, aristocrat, a queen.
Burton roared, snatched the club from Campbell's hand, and leaped upon the table. Goering fell backward, the tip of the club narrowly missing his nose. At the same time, the Roman thrust a spear at Burton and wounded him in the shoulder. Burton kept hold of the club, whirled, and knocked the weapon out of Tullius's hand. The slaves, shouting, threw themselves upon the guards. Frigget jerked a spear loose and brought the butt of it against Kaz's head. Kaz crumpled. Monak kicked a guard in the groin and picked up his spear. Burton didn't remember anything after that. He awoke several hours before dusk. His head hurt worse than before. His ribs and both shoulders were stiff with pain. He was lying on grass in a pine log enclosure with a diameter of about 50 yards. 15 feet above the grass, circling the interior of the wall, was a wooden walk on which armed guards paced. He groaned when he sat up. Frigate, squatting near him, said, I was afraid you'd never come out of it. Where are the women? Burton said. Frigate began to weep. Burton shook his head and said, Quit blubbering. Where are they? Where the hell do you think they are? Frigate said. Oh, my God.
Don't think about the women. There's nothing you can do for them. Not now, anyway. Why wasn't I killed after I attacked Goering?
Frigate wiped away the tears and said,
Beats me. Maybe they're saving you and me for the fire. As an example, I wish they had killed us.
What so recently gained paradise and wish so soon to lose it? Burton said. He began to laugh, but quit because pain speared his head. Burton talked to Robert Spruce, an Englishman born in 1945 in Kensington. Spruce said that it was less than a month since Goering and Tullius had seized power. For the time being, they were leaving their neighbors in peace. Eventually, of course, they would try to conquer the adjacent territories, including the Onondaga Indians across the river. So far, no slave had escaped to spread word about Goering's intentions.
But the people on the borders can see for themselves that the walls are being built by slaves, Burton said.
Spruce grinned wryly and said, Goering has spread the word that these are all Jews, that he's only interested in enslaving Jews, so what do they care? As you can see for yourself, that is not true. Half of the slaves are Gentile. At dusk, Burton, Frigate, Ruach, de Greystoke, and Monat were taken from the stockade and marched down to a grail rock. There were about 200 slaves there, guarded by about 70 Goeringites. Their grails were placed on the rock, and they waited. After the blue flames roared, the grails were taken down. Each slave opened his, and guards removed the tobacco, liquor, and half of the food. Frigate had gashes in his head and in his shoulder which needed sewing up, though the bleeding had stopped. His color had much improved, though his back and kidneys pained him.
So now we're slaves, Frigate said. Dick, you thought quite a lot of the institution of slavery. What do you think of it now?
That was Oriental slavery, Burton said. In this type of slavery, there's no chance for a slave to gain his freedom, nor is there any personal feeling except hatred between slave and owner. In the Orient, the situation was different. Of course, like any human institution, it had its abuses.
You're a stubborn man, Frigate said.
Have you noticed that at least half the slaves are Jews? Late 20th century Israeli, most of them. That girl over there told me that Goering managed to start Grail slavery by stirring up anti-Semitism in this area. Of course, it had to exist before it could be aroused. Then, after he had gotten into power with Tullius' aid, he enslaved many of his former supporters. He continued, "The hell of it is, Goering is not, relatively speaking, a genuine anti-Semite. He personally intervened with Himmler and others to save Jews, but he is something even worse than a genuine Jew-hater. He is an opportunist." Anti-Semitism was a tidal wave in Germany. To get any place, you had to ride the wave. So, Goering rode there just as he rode here. An anti-Semite, such as Goebbels or Frank, believed in the principles they professed. Perverted and hateful principles, true, but still principles. Whereas big, fat, happy-go-lucky Goering didn't really care one way or the other about the Jews. He just wanted to use them.